Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing early on Wednesday morning. Joining us from New York City, taking an off night from the wild 76ers-Knicks series, Tim Bontemps.
I mean, you could say that, but I had to write multiple news stories about the Sixers today. So, like always, there's always something happening in Philadelphia, as a friend of mine likes to say.
Yeah, there was a last 2 minute report that I think we're going to have to get into. We're obligated to discuss, even though there were a lot of games here on Tuesday night.
Yes.
Also joining us from New York, we're very honored that she was able to make it on. One of our favorite people, ESPN host and sideline reporter extraordinaire, Cassidy Hubbard. Hello, Cass. What's up?
Hi, guys. I'm so excited to be with you both because I adore both of you. And so let's talk NBA
you
playoffs.
Say that, but it's 1 a.m. So I don't
this
know
is
if, really
if that doesn't tell you how much I adore both of you. I don't
I
know what
say,
does.
It's true love right there.
We saw something very rare in the fourth night of the NBA playoffs. Finally, some road teams were victorious. First, the Indiana Pacers squared their series with the Bucks, breaking the run of 12 straight victories by the home team. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But the big game, I think, on Tuesday night was the Dallas Mavericks going into LA with Kawhi Leonard coming back and pulling out a very impressive victory where they held the Clippers to 93 points. And it really was less than that because Paul George threw in a three-pointer at the buzzer that tightened up the score, but they pretty much held them to one of their worst offensive games of the season. I think they shot 38-39%, one of their worst shooting performances of the season. And I have to say, it was quite a mature performance from Luka Doncic, who was getting double teamed, and he still definitely got his scoring, got his baskets in. He made a three-pointer with about a minute and a half left that he threw in, right? He basically threw it in. I'm not sure why James Harden was on him. He picked him up at the beginning of the play, and he was like, okay, well, if Harden's going to be on me, I'll take advantage of it. That basically, it gave him a 9-point lead, and then it was a free throw game. But he played very good. Overall, Dallas played very good defense. Definitely an illustration of how much of a different team they are this year than last year winning this game. And Cass, you were at the game one. You did the sidelines for game one of this series. Out in LA, crossing the country. You got to see that game, which was, you know, totally a stunner by how well the Clippers played. Kawhi comes back and they squared the series in this one. This is a classic playoff situation here.
Yeah. I mean, look, the big storyline in game one was that the Clippers came out swinging and, you know, put the Mavs on their heels. This game, the Mavs responded. You know, that's what the playoffs are about. Like, they came in, with all the momentum in terms of heading into the postseason, the Mavericks. And it was surprising to see how bad they looked at that first half in particular, in game one. But tonight, you know, even with losing Gafford in the first half, you know, they were able to figure it out. And so I think the Mavericks behind, like you said, the defense, I liked how you put it, very mature performance. Is that another word where
he did get a tech.
Luka Doncic he did. And he was talking a whole lot, Brian. He was talking a whole lot, especially after that dagger. But the maturity, I think you're saying, is we saw him put in effort on both sides of the ball.
Well, the maturity came in that 14-0 run in the fourth quarter, too, because Ivica Zubac, who, again, really controlled the paint, talked a lot about that on our last pod about how that was a huge story from game one. He gets a bucket. They go up 6, 9.5 to go in the game. You're thinking, man, Dallas is in a lot of trouble, about to be down 0-2. Kawhi isn't even playing very well. He's getting his legs underneath him. This could be real danger time. And PJ Washington, one of the guys they traded for at the deadline, made some huge shots down the stretch. Luka made some daggers.
And Maxi Kleber with a big three.
Right.
Maxi Kleber with a big three. I mean, Kyrie made some plays. I mean, everybody who was out there contributed. And that was a situation.
Well, yeah.
Yep. Derek Lively made some huge plays. And like they were in a situation where that could have very easily gone the other way. Russell Westbrook was making all kinds of hustle plays. The Clippers had all the momentum. Dallas couldn't get anything going. And I think maturity is the right word to use about their performance, because they sort of, they absorb that run, they hit back, they get a win, and now they go home with home court advantage in their pocket and some real momentum, I think, for digging out an ugly game, like Cass said, the kind of game that this team probably isn't winning the first half of the year, or, you know, winning last year.
Two Luka stats that I want to talk about. One is believable. One is jaw-dropping. He made 11 baskets in this game. It wasn't a great game. They were a great shooting game for him. They were double-teaming him routinely. He was either facing double teams or a lot passing out. He did have 9 assists. All 11 of his baskets were contested. He actually got 4 uncontested shots. He missed all 4 of them. All 11 were contested. And Harden, not the greatest defender in the NBA, but did contest that 3-pointer that he made that basically sealed the game. This is the one that's stunning. When Luka, according to ESPN Stats and Info Tracking, I want to give them full credit. When Luka was the primary defender, the Clippers were 2 of 17 shooting and 0 of 11 when he contested the shot. Now, this kind of a statistic is obviously
very wonky.
It's wonky, but because you can look at it in different things. But even without that stat, if you watch this game and you saw the way Luka defended, using his size, working to get in position, not giving up on plays. This was, I haven't watched all the Luka games. Tim McMahon has watched most of them. The reason ESPN Stats and Info got that stat was because midway through the fourth quarter, McMahon on the Slack asked for it. He said, wait a minute, I have not seen Luka play like this before. What's his numbers? And they came up with that stat because just the eye test, even without that number, Luka was really working hard. And this is a carryover, Cass, from the way the Mavericks finished the season, where over the last 15 games, they were the best defensive team. This is why they were really not just the Vogue pick, but like a, with uncertainty about Kawhi, a real honest pick to make the conference finals out of that half of the bracket, because they can win a game like this. And Luka was the catalyst for it, I think.
Jason Kidd post game said that was a real 90s basketball type of game.
He remembers
it. Do we agree?
And 2000s.
Did it feel like a 90s basketball game? I mean, is that what we...
I don't know about that.
It didn't feel like a 2024 basketball game. I can tell you that.
I will say, though, was, you know, to see the physicality of the Mavericks, you know, like they got beat up in game one and then, you know, they threw out their own shots here in game two. And like you said, going back to Dallas with the series tied, what did you guys think about Kawhi, though? You know,
well, I was going to say, I thought that the play to me that summed up Luka's defensive performance was he got matched up on Kawhi midway through the fourth quarter as part of this run. And you could tell Kawhi was like, all right, I'm going to go get myself a bucket. And Luka stayed with him, drove him, pushed him to the baseline, and he ended up taking an incredibly difficult shot over Luka. And I think a second defender came over. And like, Luka did a great job and stayed right in him. And, you know, that's not the kind of effort, especially in a game where Luka played 46 minutes.
Played
46 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Got up a ton of shots, obviously had a ball a ton, did a lot of work, and was competing. Right. All the way through. So again, maturity, it was a mature performance from him on the road in a big spot. As far as your question, Cass, I thought, especially in the second half, understandably, Kawhi, his legs died on him. He couldn't really do much at all. And for as well as the Mavericks played defensively, the Clippers did him a lot of favors because they didn't really do much of anything. It felt like in the second half, it was very station to station. And if it wasn't Westbrook forcing the tempo or Zubac doing something inside, it was a lot of standing around and jacking up a shot for them. And Kawhi, I think in particular, just looked very tired.
Yeah. I'm also interested to see how his knee responds. I mean, he played 35 minutes and, you know, when we were all in Kawhi gate, you know, whatever you want to call it, whatever. It was all just about how unpredictable that inflammation is. So these next couple of days before they go to Dallas, obviously they're going to be paying attention to that. But his rhythm didn't clearly wasn't all the way there. You know, having missed so many games before this one. So, but you know,
Well, I felt like in the fourth quarter, he wasn't looking to go to the basket. The only time he did go to the basket was on the after timeout play that Ty Lue drew up where he took a back cut. And I honestly am a little bit, I'm not the biggest, I don't know all the referee details and all the rules. I am a little bit confused. I have seen three calls in the last 24 hours get overturned that I thought were fouls.
Hands part of the ball, Brian.
But I think he like actively slapped him on the arm. I guess this is just an indication of the way they're calling the game, which is that they're just letting more stuff go. It looked like it was going to be a 3-point play. And just like in the Laker game and in the 76er Knick game, a foul was overturned that I thought Jason, that's a terrible challenge. He clearly slapped him on the arm and I just am wrong. I don't know what's going on here, but the point is that the only time Kawhi went to the basket in the fourth was when it was a drawn up play on the sideline for him to go to the basket. So, and it's not a surprise. He hasn't played in 3.5 weeks. And I don't think he actually had a real practice in there. If he did, that he did.
No. I mean, they said he had no contact, but that's also, he doesn't. Ty Lue also says he doesn't really do contact practice before he returns from injury anyway. So
yeah, yeah, I guess that's true.
Kawhi does the Kawhi plan, whatever that is.
Yeah.
He didn't look awful. He was cutting and changing direction. Like,
I thought physically he looked fine. I think he just ran out of gas.
Yeah. Well, this is.
But as Cassidy said, let's see how he bounces back, because we have seen Kawhi come in and out a lot. So let's see.
And I've seen Kawhi have some big playoff games in Dallas.
I just also wanted to say Kyrie was fun to watch too.
We didn't. I thank you for bringing that up. Kyrie also with some big baskets and a very under control performance. You know,
also mature. Also, look at this maturation process of the Mavericks.
I have to say, after the first quarter on Sunday?
Yes.
You did an
interview with Kyrie after the first quarter. Number one, I can't believe Kyrie agreed to do it.
Yeah.
Number two, they were getting...
The day before he agreed as well. So he
okay. Well, I guess agreeing to it is one thing and doing it's another. He did both.
Yes.
The Mavericks were playing terribly at that point. And he gave very clear, concise, honest answers to you. That was a really good in-game interview.
With a smile. Yes. So for all the in-game interview haters, sometimes we get a gem. And Kyrie was a gem.
Yeah, I was...
You know what? And Zubats was the gem. We would have kept talking to me
He had the rest of the game off at that point. So
yeah, he was having the best playoff game of his career as well. It was like
15-20 by the third quarter. Yeah.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. So I thought that we would be seeing a 1-1 series out of Phoenix and Minnesota. I actually thought this was going to be one of the most compelling series, which is one of the reasons you got to be careful making any predictions, because it's hard. And you know, if you told me before the game that Ant Edwards was going to go 3 of 12 and that Karl Towns was going to score 12 points, I would have liked the Suns' chances. And, you know, they seemed like they were pretty confident, even though Minnesota handled him very well in game one. in listening to their interviews on the off day in between games, they were very confident. Devin Booker was like, yeah, people thought we were cooked last year against the Clippers. We won four in a row. Of course, when he said that, I was thinking, yeah, well, Kawhi got hurt in game one. But just 93 points for the Suns. The Wolves defense has held them to below 100 in both games. And the depth difference in these two teams has been glaring. Now, before I go over it, you do often see role players play better at home than on the road in the playoffs. It's not an ironclad rule, but you do see it. And also the Suns have been affected by Grayson Allen, who sprained his ankle in both games. Sprained his ankle in game one and left, fought to come back, probably wasn't anywhere close to 100%, and then much worse, sprained the ankle. And now I'm not sure he's going to be able to continue going. But the Suns don't have very many role players. They had the lowest scoring bench in the league this year. They were 30th in bench points this year. So you're already going to be at a deficit. Well, the Minnesota role players just squashed them. Jaden McDaniels, who's a defensive specialist, he had 25 points, one of the best games of his career considering the circumstances. Rudy Gobert had 18. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who has been maybe the best, if not the best, one of the best bench players so far in the playoffs, was great. And Bontemps, the Suns get worked over in a game where Ant Edwards is kind of a non-factor. He had a moment or two, and that's a bad sign. And I know that being down 2-0 isn't necessarily a death knell when you have stars like they do, but extremely unimpressive performance in game two for the Suns and an extremely good depth showing from the Wolves.
After they got smoked in game one as well. And you could see there was a shot of Kevin Durant walking off the court at halftime. And he looked like he was kind of looking off into space. And I think you could, at least for me, I read into that look that he thought the Suns were in a lot of trouble because they were up by 1 point, they're up by 1 point right at halftime. In a game where Karl Towns, per Karl Towns' normal habits, committed three fouls in the first quarter. Last one, not particularly great, even by his standards. He's on the bench. Anthony Edwards and he combine in the first half to go 1-for-7 from the field. And it's a 1 point game at halftime. That is a sign of the fact that, as you just said, and as we've talked about since they put the Suns together, this team has no depth. They're extraordinarily top heavy. Those three guys have to be great, and they were not. And they were not really close to great. And, you know, if you line up those guys together, Durant is 6-for-15, Booker's 6-for-17, 6-for-13, I should say, and Beal's 6-for-17. And those guys combined to go 18-for-45. They're not winning any playoff game if those three guys are combining to go 18-for-45 from the field. And Rudy Gobert, the best defensive player in the league, the guy who will win Defensive Player of the Year next week, guy who Tim McMahon wrote a great story about today. You should go check it out if you haven't seen it. Was unbelievable at the rim. And Minnesota looks like the deeper, more connected, more versatile team. And especially with Grayson Allen out, the Suns look cooked. And maybe they can summon something in Phoenix, but I'm tempted to say this series is over. Because I don't see how they're winning 4 out of 5 with this group, with the lack of depth that they have. And frankly, the way that their stars have looked, it's just hard to have any confidence in this team.
And to quote Anthony Edwards, they got KD, but we got Jaden McDaniels.
Jaden was feeling himself at one point, just started shoving Devin Booker in this game. I mean, if you didn't already know, he was doing fine. He just was like, yeah, I don't like that you made this shot, so I'm going to shove you.
I mean, he was 10 of 17 and he had a game high 25 points. And this is when we're talking about, you know, a guy who is for casuals, as they say, known for his defense. And
no, they want him to shoot 17 times. I think if you ask Frank Vogel, hey, Jaden McDaniels is going to shoot 17, he'd be like, sounds good to me.
Yeah, I mean, process-wise, you feel good about that. But again, like, the Suns just don't have a lot of cards to play. They've got their handful of guys they're going to play, and that's it. And They only got up 22 three-point attempts. They don't have a lot of guys who can get up threes. Like, they're just, they kind of are what they are.
And
their best guys haven't been good enough, and they haven't been good enough, and they've gotten, you know, trucked really in the first two games of the series.
Right. And they continue to be just awful in the clutch. I mean, it's like inconceivable. I know this has been, you know, kind of the stench that has fouled them around specifically in the second half of the season, but why are they so bad when you have such clutch players? It doesn't make any sense. Is it just because they don't have a true point guard and they can't organize themselves?
That's a big factor. This question has been asked, and not just by the fans and the media, like it's been asked internally by the Suns for months. And trust me, they looked at everything that they could look at to try to figure out why in the fourth quarter they can't handle their business. I was doing some research today because, frankly, I was assigned to write the Suns' end of season story, and I needed to get it together.
Brian's just trying to avoid it because his pet pick since the summer is going down in flames, so he's avoiding calling it what it is.
Well, I would never pick them to win the West. I just believed that they were gonna come together. Obviously, that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
They played 82 games, obviously. They got outscored in the fourth quarter 47 times. Now, somehow in that stretch, they went 25 and 22. But getting outscored 47 times, like, in all honesty, based on that stat alone, it's a miracle they were the sixth seed. But the reason they were the sixth seed was because they 10 different times they were leading going into the fourth and lost. And 47 times they got outscored. Now, obviously, there's going to be games in there where you're up 25 and you get outscored and it's garbage time or whatever. But that happened in this game. They lost leverage in the third quarter. And you would think with a team like them, even on the road, that they would do it. But they have no confidence. And it's across the board. They don't have organized offense. They have too many turnovers. They lose their composure. I mean, Vogel was asked this question dozens of times during the season, and he gave the same answer many times, or a version of the same answer, which is, it's not one thing, it's not two things, it's not three things, it's a whole bunch of things. Mm-hmm. And they tried changing their lineups. They tried different rotations. One of the big problems for a while was that Booker would always play the whole third quarter, and then he'd sit for the first 4 or 5 minutes of the fourth, and they'd get obliterated in those minutes. So they changed it up and had Booker start the fourth, and they started playing Bradley Beal more as the initiator on offense, and nothing worked.
Right.
And they have no comp. You can see, Bontemps, you talked about the body language.
Not good. Yeah.
Yeah. They have no confidence. I mean, they were not out of this game in the fourth quarter.
No.
But they were a wet noodle when the fourth quarter started. And
the vibes were not immaculate.
No, they were anything but. And look, I've been thinking about this for the past couple of days, obviously in light of what happened with the Lakers the other night too. We've talked, obviously, all year. We talk all the time about Kevin Durant, about Stephen Curry, about LeBron James. They're obviously all still fantastic players. They're all around my all-NBA teams this year. But 3, 4, 5 years ago, those guys were 3 of the 5 best players in the league. And if you look at Denver, Denver's got some real flaws. They've got pretty light bench. They've got to play guys like Reggie Jackson a lot of minutes. He's very inconsistent. They have no bigs.
They got the best bigs and nobody else.
They're playing Christian Brown and Peyton Watson, two guys that are very inconsistent shooters at best. They guard, they do some other stuff, but they're not giving them a lot offensively, right? But they have the best player on the planet. And when you have the best player on the planet, you can get away with a lot of stuff team building wise because you have the ace card. LeBron James is now 39. Kevin Durant's in his mid to late 30s. Steph Curry's in his mid to late 30s. You look at the Suns, the Lakers, and the Warriors. They are good teams, but flawed teams. And these guys are just not quite good enough anymore to supersede all the flaws. And so they have moments where they look great. when they're feeling good and they're playing great and they have more moments like these couple games where they run up against a good team, or like the Lakers obviously playing Denver is another story, even like when the Warriors played the Kings, and they just don't have enough in whatever the various areas they have. And for this Suns team, it's a lack of organization, it's a lack of shooting, and it's a lack of size. And Rudy Gobert just dominated the game, dominated the paint. They didn't feel comfortable getting in the paint. And there's just not really an answer for that. I mean, the Suns are playing Drew Eubanks in the fourth quarter of a playoff game. Drew Eubanks is a mediocre center, but he's got to play. Like, these are the guys they have to play because they don't have any other choice. And it's just the situation that they're in.
And the Suns are searching for answers going up against the number one defense in the NBA, which is just smothering, you know? KD's only had...
Yeah, Jackson just put up a stat. KD's taken 3 uncontested shots in the first 2 games total. And frankly, KD's just not getting up shots. Like, he's got to have more than 15 shots in the game.
He's got to.
The way their team is built, like, those guys have to shoot 80% of the shots. They have to. And if they don't, they're not going to score enough. Even against a team like Minnesota that's up and down scoring.
Well, you use the analogy of having the ace if you're the Nuggets. One of the things as I was thinking about and writing about the Suns, you know, the Suns are viewed as, you know, having, you know, using the poker analogy, they're having this all-in season, right? They, you know, they traded all their draft picks, traded all their, you know, almost all of their role players to put all the chips in the middle with these 3 stars.
Yep.
The problem is it's going to be a losing hand, because no matter what happens in this series, they don't have enough to make a run. Their season is going to end. And by the way, if their season ends in this first round, it's very disappointing, because at least last year they got to the second round and were 2-2 with the Nuggets. They lose this series, this massive swing. The whole point of that trade was to put themselves in a better chance against the Nuggets, right, to get more firepower against the Nuggets.
Well, that was the theory, at least.
Clearly. They won't have, if they lose, you know, if they don't win 4 out of 5, they're not even going to get back to make another swing at the Nuggets. And again, thinking about poker, the problem is that I don't think they can change their hand. Like, what the hand that they're holding, I think they got to play the same hand next year. They just got to play it better.
Well, they have one tradable asset, which is Kevin Durant. So that makes it hard to change your hand. Because Bradley Beal's got a no trade clause, and in theory, Devin Booker's your franchise player in his prime.
Bradley Beal has a no trade clause.
He sure does.
One of the biggest things about the whole thing, regardless of what you think about anything about that trade, because it wasn't like Chris Paul killed it this year for the Warriors, but they definitely paid a price there for not having Chris. But okay, you do the deal, but Beal keeping the no trade, you know, because he had to waive the no trade clause to do the deal. And what you'd want there is the no trade clause to go away. But
which, by the way, he could say, I will just eliminate it. There was something that could have been done. It's not like it wasn't possible. He just to it, and it's his right. He had it in his contract, but he kept it.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I get it. He, for this exact reason, if it didn't work out, he didn't want to lose it. I mean, no fault to him and no good job by his agent, but that hamstrings them. I mean, I guess you could trade Yusef Nurkic. He makes $18 million, but there's no value there. And there's,
yes, they have one trade. They have one asset to trade. That's, I didn't say they have other players they could trade. They have one asset they could trade.
Yeah. So, but props to Minnesota, who has, you know, not won a playoff series since 2004.
And real quick too, talking about mature performances, Anthony Edwards, to me, had an extraordinarily mature performance in this game, because he didn't shoot the ball well. It would have been very easy. He's playing up against his idol, as we saw the other day in game one. He's jawing at him. You know, he's amped up. He struggled against these guys in the regular season. That was a big storyline, right? He didn't average like 14 points a game in the 3 games in the regular season. They had a whole thing to slow him down. He went 3 for 12 in this game, but he had 8 assists. He was guarding like a madman. He was making the right plays. He wasn't forcing anything. I thought, again, to go back to what we talked about with Luka, he did the stuff his team needed to win the game as its best player, even when he wasn't playing his best game, which in a spot like this, I think is a real sign of growth and a really exciting sign for Minnesota as they try to win their first playoff series in literally a generation over the next few days.
Yeah, I think he was like 1.5 the last time the Wolves won a series. Maybe he was 2.
Well, the truly remarkable thing about the history of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I want to double check this, is I believe they've only ever won a playoff series in one season, which is correct. They got to the Western Conference Finals in 2004 with Kevin Garnett and Sam Cassell and Charles Sprewell. And they have not won a playoff series in any other season in the 35 years they've existed. So obviously it would be a monumental achievement if they can win 2 more games here and get themselves likely into a series with Denver.
Yeah, just being up 2-0.
Yes.
I don't know. That's completely unheard of territory for them, being up 2-0.
They've made the playoffs twice in the last 20 years, and both times they lost in 5 games, I believe.
Has Kevin Durant got out of the first round since he left the Warriors?
He got to the second round with the Nets in 2021.
Right.
He was swept in 22, and then he got to the second round last year. That's but he hasn't got out of the second round since 2019.
Well, we'll see. The Suns still have a little bit of wiggle room, but it's very hard to trust them. And you know what? In all honesty, if the Suns won the next 2 games, let's say that they played great, which we've seen them do. They had a great finish to the season. I can't trust them in game 5. I can't trust them in game 6. They're a completely untrustworthy team.
Well, they don't trust each other. That's evident right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well said. Very well said. So breaking the string of home teams winning the first 12 games, which was the longest streak since 2004, since we're dipping back to 2004 is our theme here, 20 years. The Pacers struck back and won for the 5th time this year against the Milwaukee Bucks. Pascal Siakam, who they're very likely the Pacers to give a max contract this offseason. Pascal Siakam is having one of the best starts of anybody in the NBA.
He's flat out been the MVP of the first 2 games of the playoffs.
I have to think about that, but it's hard to say that because they're 1-1, but he had a career high.
They stole home court, and he's been incredible both games.
We had 36 and 10. I'm not sure how many rebounds he had, but he had 36 and 10. I mean, that was his playoff career high. And he's got a long playoff history because of all his time with the Raptors. He played a lot of playoff games with the Raptors. 36 in game 1.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Just his playoff career high. And then in game 2, he was brilliant in game 2. 37. And this is the stat that'll stop you in your tracks. Pascal Siakam is the 3rd player in NBA history with consecutive 35-point 10 rebound games to start a postseason. You want to take a guess at one? Because
it's got to be like Wilt and Shaq or Wilt and Tim Duncan or something like that.
By the way, and first since 1967 to do that.
Okay, so Wilt and Russell?
Wilt and Elgin Baylor, who did it in 61.
I was hoping it was our guy Bob Pettit, our pod favorite Bob Pettit. But
yes, we try to get as many Bob Pettit references as possible because McMahon disrespected him once. Oh. Bob Pettit.
Oh, more than once.
But anyway, how about that for Pascal Siakam? And the big thing in this game, there are 2 big things I took away from this game. One, the Bucks have decided clearly that they are not going to be beaten by Tyrese Haliburton. And so they are trapping him, crowding him. They want the ball out of his hands. He took 7 shots in game 1. He took 10 shots in game 2. And in game 1, I'm not sure that the Pacers were ready for it. In game 2, the ball started moving and they shot the ball better. I think
even though he only took 10 shots, he was way more aggressive in this game than he was in game 1.
Yes, he had 12 assists. They made 16 threes. I think they made 10 in the first half. And Siakam was part of that. Miles Turner was part of that. You know, Aaron Nesmith was part of that. They had just a better, more sound preparation for what the Bucks threw at them. And I think, that 125 points is a Pacer game. Much more comfortable in this setting. The second thing is, Dame had another big scoring night. He had 34, but again, had almost nothing in the second half. Now in game 1, he scored 35 in the first half and they didn't need him in the second half. And it was sort of, they were playing out the string, but they are throwing some of the same stuff, at Lillard with the doubles and stuff. And he's not handling it well. And so he has not scored in the fourth quarter in either game. Now, again, game one, Bucks had a big lead. This game was not over in the fourth quarter. Dame was not able to get going. And so Cass, there is no indication that Giannis is close here. Right. And this injury is serious and severe. And I can't predict what's going to happen 3, 4, 5 days from now. But if you're the Bucks, you cannot expect him to come riding in. And their paint points absolutely have collapsed without Giannis. They were one of the leading paint scoring teams in the league. I'm not sure what they ended up with, but they were getting outscored by 20 points in the paint. I'll look it up here in a second. But the Bucks adjustments that they're going to have to make, it's going to be a challenge. We knew that coming in, and the Pacers were a very popular pick in this series with Giannis's injury, and this game illustrated why.
Well, I think also all year, you know, the Bucks with Giannis on the floor and without Giannis on the floor, it was a tale of two teams. And, you know, it does feel like there's this like cloud over the Bucks, feeling like, well, he's going to return like soon, right? This is not who we are in the playoffs. Our playoffs haven't started yet, almost feeling over Milwaukee. And it is fully started. And, you know, Tyrese Halliburton throwing shade on the Milwaukee fans, saying that they'd have better regular season games.
He also said that his family heard racial slurs during game one, which is extraordinarily upsetting for a number of different reasons, especially because the Halliburton family is one of the great families of Wisconsin,
yeah,
like a very, very proud Wisconsin family. Like, not that it matters in this regard, but like, obviously you're not cheering for him when he's playing against your team, but like, you know, his father, who is one of the most well-known NBA dads at this point, like very still proudly lives in Oshkosh, mm-hmm. and is like a member of the fabric of the community in Oshkosh. So anyway, but yes, he was throwing shade at the Bucks fans, who he was a Bucks fan.
Yeah.
I think most of his life.
For
well,
sure.
Well, more so in terms of also, you know, the playoff intensity, you know, in this is a playoff series. Like, it's officially on. And I don't know if Milwaukee, it was concerning that Dame, you know, they had such a big lead in that game one that didn't matter, but I don't know how you go scoreless in the second half. And I just don't know where they find answers other than with Giannis coming back.
Well, certainly Giannis coming back will help, assuming he will. He did get on the floor. He shot today. Doc Rivers said he's getting closer. I know Giannis a little bit. I have not been around Giannis in a while. I suspect Giannis is going to try like hell to play in game three. Whether he should or not is another matter. I haven't been around him in quite a while. I don't know where he's at physically, but I know Giannis. I know after losing this game, he's going to be antsy to play and be out there with his team. And this is a very tricky injury, as we've talked about a bunch. You can re-aggravate a calf injury real quick. Obviously, it can cause other problems too. Brian, you've repeatedly talked about how he's had this Achilles soreness. He's had these other various knee issues. Like, there's a lot of kinetic chain stuff that's worrisome with injury like this. And as we all know, Giannis is a big physical guy. He's very explosive, that it's not like he can sort of ease his way back in if he's going to play. So we'll see what happens.
And they do get 2 days off. Game three is not until Friday. So
Friday at 5:30 on ESPN, which
is that right?
Yes. We have a triple header. So it's the first game. But look, through the coming into this series, I didn't think that, especially with Giannis out, Milwaukee would be able to keep up with Indiana. That's why I picked Indiana to win in six. Now, certainly in game one, they look like they'd never been at a basketball court before for most of it, so they got smoked. But in this game, it looked a lot more like what I thought it was going to, which is Bobby Portis on Pascal Siakam is a disaster. He has smoked him both games and been...
He just gets open, so it's way too easy. Siakam's shots are way too easy open. He doesn't have to work hard to get... He has to make it, but he's not having to work hard to get the shot.
Well, in this game in particular, the Pacers slammed the ball down the throats of the Bucks in transition. Anytime there was a missed shot, anytime there was a brief second, it was boom, 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 down the court, layup. And that's what Indiana has to do to stay in the series. It's why Indiana was up 4-1 in the regular season series, even though it was a different team and it was before Halliburton got hurt. And again, even though Halliburton only got 10 shots today, he was a lot more aggressive. As you said, they were moving the ball a lot better. They're pushing the tempo a lot more. This is the way that they need to play to win the series. And Chris Middleton, another thing to watch, sprained his ankle early in the game. He got it retaped. He came back. He played a bunch of minutes. He was okay. Not great. But you go down the list of the Bucks, and, you know, if you're playing Pat Beverly 35 minutes, he ain't scoring for you. And if you've got, you know, Middleton, Portis, Lopez, Lillard, those four guys are playing a lot. They don't really have a lot of offense outside of them. So if Indiana can get to 120 or 125 in a game, you really like their chances in this current alignment. And then it's like Cass said, we just got to, I mean, if we got to just wait and see what happens with Giannis, because obviously that's sort of the one curveball that can come back in the series. But it's not like Milwaukee can just start guarding him better. Like, this is the issue that the Bucks had all year. They have no athleticism. They can't keep up with a team like this.
And then with Pascal, though, it's just your point, Tim. Like, I don't know if I'd go as far as saying that he's been the MVP of the playoffs so far, but he's, you know, he's playing like a champ. He's playing with the confidence of someone who, you know, and poise of someone who understands this stage. And then, you know, post game, you know, he's talking about how empowered he feels by from this Pacers organization. And saying that
a little shade at the Raptors there.
Yeah, a little bit. They give me everything.
Just a bit.
The love is amazing. I'm back where I belong. I just want to compete, and he's competing, and he looks like Spicy P out there. Yeah.
He also had six assists to go with the 37-11. By the way, the Pacers shot 56% in this game, and I just looked it up. They won the points in the paint 52-36, and the Bucks were 18-40 in the paint, which less than 50%, not acceptable, and the inverse of what you'd expect from Giannis.
Indiana didn't turn the ball over. Another huge thing, because the more possessions they have, the more they're going to score, because the Bucks aren't stopping them.
Right. All right. Well, game three is on Friday. We'll see what happens with that.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. So the obviously it was a dramatic night, Monday night, with the game in Denver. Jamal Murray hits the shot at the buzzer to take the Lakers down, 20-point comeback. And then the 27 seconds that could define the series between the Knicks and the 76ers, where the Knicks get the 6 points in, what was it, 10 seconds, 12 seconds?
They got six points in 14 seconds.
14 seconds.
14.3. It's not quite Reggie Miller, 9 points in 8 seconds, but it was something.
The probability was about the same. and like with the Reggie Miller play, where there was some controversy about how he got a steal on the inbounds all those years ago, controversy with this one. And look, I'll just let you take over here, Bontemps. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what it was like on 7th and 8th Avenues, Cass, after that win.
I think I heard it all the way downtown.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. I heard it leaving the building. I heard it while I was in the building. It was,
yeah,
I mean, look, the Garden, you guys, you know, Cass and I obviously live here, and Brian, you've been to plenty of games at the Garden. There's really nothing like the Garden for a moment
Agreed.
And it was such a surreal game because it's obviously this is the marquee series of the round. You've got Joel Embiid hobbling around, looked like he messed up his knee in the third quarter again, but he's gotten it out. Tyrese Maxey didn't show up to shoot around, was questionable to play.
Yeah.
Does not usually he's bouncing around all happy. He was there playing, but he wasn't feeling good. And he has 35-9-10. He Brilliant. Buries this three off a nice pass from Embiid, who got double teamed to kick them the pass. Thing Embiid has always struggled with in the past. They're up four with a minute to go. They'd had this big comeback. It's like, wow, the Sixers have overcome Josh Hart hitting all these shots and all this chaos. They're going to win the game. And Kyle Lowry then splits a pair of free throws with 47 seconds to go. Like, all right, Sixers up five. Feels like things are done. And then I was at the game earlier this year when Dante DiVincenzo ran over Asar Thompson at the same end of the court. And the Knicks ended up winning a game in hectic fashion. And there was a lot of controversy about the refs. And the same exact thing happened here. And look, I know the last 2 minute report said that Nick Nurse should have got a timeout. And there was a couple fouls with Tyrese Maxey. Tyrese Maxey certainly got grabbed by Jalen Brunson. That was the one play I thought absolutely should have been called and was a mistake. The rest of it, I thought, was all fairly 50-50 stuff. They could have got the calls. They could have not got the calls.
Yeah, I mean,
ultimately,
look, we all have huge respect for Nick Nurse. He did signal timeout. He was late calling it. And he said the referee was looking at him, but I don't know.
At the end of the day, this is what I was going to say. At the end of the day, did the Sixers get jobbed a bit here? Yes. They got jobbed a bit here. Usually in these situations, you have to have some bad luck to lose. They also participated in their own demise.
Yeah.
Because Tyrese Maxey should have called timeout when he was on the ground.
Maybe should have called timeout when he was inbound.
Kyle should have called timeout. Nick could have been more aggressive in calling timeout. They then got an open layup for Tyrese.
Tyrese was weak with the ball as well. I mean, I know he got fouled, but he was weak with the ball.
Yes, it's all of it's together. It's
People in Philly are going to rip me for saying that, but
no, he said it. He said it. Tyrese said it.
And you know, look, Nick Nurse thought he should have got a timeout. Joel was not happy.
Joel didn't box out Hartenstein. Hartenstein is standing.
Hartenstein.
He boxed out. This is the one thing that's been lost in that. I'm not about to defend Joel. Hartenstein comes down and gets the rebound. He got the rebound because Josh Hart, who played every second of the game, ran out, got the steal, and then crashed like a madman to get the offensive rebound. And Joel saw him coming and moved over to box him out. And everyone else stood there. And Hartenstein comes down the middle and gets the rebound. Because that, in essence, defined that whole sequence, all of that insanity, it defines this Knicks team. This Knicks team is the ultimate Grit. Tom Thibodeau team.
Yes.
All heart and grit, and you've got these three Villanova guys who are best friends, who know where they all are at all times, and there's total belief in everybody. And the coolest thing about the whole thing, so the game ends, the Sixers, Joel gets a chance to win the game, tie the game at the buzzer, he misses. Rebecca Harlow is interviewing Dante DiVincenzo on the court after the game for MSG, because it was a simulcast. We had it and MSG had it. The crowd was so loud that Rebecca Harlow is on the loudspeakers asking him a question, could not hear a word she said. And it took until they kind of quieted down as Dante started talking to just hear him say, like, hey, listen to what's going on here. This is why we are here and playing here. Of course, then the place went absolutely ballistic again. But, you know, the Sixers today got some vindication, I guess, from not getting these calls.
Their grievance that was filed.
Well, yeah.
But what do you get from that? You know,
nothing.
No, you get nothing. That's
so
right.
It's just
you get an extra couple of graphs in Daryl Morey's dossier that he'll file.
The last 2 minute report is a ridiculous invention and should be blown to smithereens. All it does
is
cause
empty. Yeah.
It's empty, and it just causes more anger and hostility towards the refs for literally no reason. It's not
Which
doing
everybody
any good
has
for
said
anyone.
A thousand times for the last 5 years, and it hasn't changed.
Yes, the NBA, like the NBA, is very worried about transparency, except when it comes to things like injury reporting, and then they don't care about it.
Well,
but this,
you're
gonna, they really
now
care
you're
going
to get a call from Fifth Avenue on that. But
yeah, I'm sure I will. That's also true
because they've been finding people for injury reporting. But I will say, such cast, such vibes on that play for me, thinking about the Heat Spurs game. So similar because it all started with a missed free throw. Kawhi split free throws.
Mm-hmm. One of five games that those are two of five games in the last 30 years where a team came back from down five in the final 30 seconds of regulation.
Lowry split the free throw. It's lost. People will forget he missed the second free throw, which would have big time helped. Kawhi missed a free throw.
Yep.
They get a second chance three-pointer, which was the first three-pointer that they got was also a second-chance three-pointer, but obviously the Ray Allen three was a second-chance three-pointer. Bosch got lost. It was a friendly fire rebound. Bosch got lost, got the rebound. Hartenstein got lost. It reminded me, this is how much of an outlier it is, just to make the Sixers feel more miserable. It reminded me of the Heat. It reminded me of the Sixers' loss to the Raptors because Jalen Brunson takes a shot that bounces on the front of the rim.
He was like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, nice.
And by the way, Jalen Brunson almost didn't even get to that point because Kyle Lowry, his Villanova guy, nearly stole the ball from him at the start
Lowry
of the play. And there was
on the
a rugby
floor,
scrum
almost
for it.
A steal, yeah. And the ball bounces on the rim. That gives me Kawhi vibes. And then the Hartenstein rebound gives me Derek White vibes from last year when the game in Miami.
In game six.
Yeah, where it looks like the Heat are winning it. The ball goes up and Derek White's staying at the three-point line and just comes unfettered in to get the putback. Go back and watch it. Don't do it if you're a Philly fan. You don't want to see it again. When DiVincenzo shoots that first three, Hartenstein is like 4 feet from him. He just follows the ball to the rim and doesn't get touched.
Yeah.
So it was a combination, in my view, of all of those things.
Listen, 10 things had to go wrong for the Sixers to lose that game in that 14.3 second stretch, and they all went wrong. The refs, them, the Knicks making plays, all of it. All of it had to go in a certain way. It all did. It's why it's a memorable game.
Yeah, and some better be lucky than good.
And I was very surprised.
But you also, Cass, you also create your own luck. And the Knicks play so hard.
Yeah.
That was created in part by creating their own luck and attacking the glass. And the Sixers did 1,000 times better on the offensive glass in this game. But the ultimate outcome, and Tyrese Maxey was the first thing you said after the game, they got 12 offensive rebounds and we got 10. The two offensive rebounds they got in the final 30 seconds of the game are the difference in the game. We can't do that. Yeah. Like, that's it.
And how do they bounce back from this, though? So they're eating
Joel air. Joel said they're going to win the series. I don't know.
This was the most fascinating part of the whole thing because, I mean, set aside Daryl's silliness. You know, Nick comes in. He was clearly frustrated, as you would imagine. But towards the end of his presser, he says, hey, look, you know, we played really well. We did a lot of stuff right. We feel good about where we're at. This just makes it a longer series, which is a pretty good line. And then you go in the locker room. And Kyle Lowry, who had briefly looked like he got hurt on that same play when all the chaos happened, he had to get sort of carried off the court. He's feeling okay and walking around, which is a good sign. And you talked about the vibes earlier with the Suns not being immaculate. The vibes in the Sixers locker room after this game were actually pretty good. Like, were the Sixers happy with the refs? No. Were they happy they lost the game? No. But there was a defiance in the room that we're going to come back and win the series, which obviously was most expressly sentimented by Joel, who just flat out said multiple times, we are going to win the series. We are the better team. We are going to be fine, in between cursing out the refs. But I said before that game, I thought it was going to be 2-2 after we're at game four on Sunday. I still think it's going to be 2-2 after game four on Sunday. I do think the Sixers process has been pretty good through the first couple games for the most part. But there's a lot of stuff on the margins the Knicks have beat them on. And we'll see if, as this shifts to Philly, if some of those things start to shift in Philly's direction.
Yeah, well, I just feel like any whistle that comes against the Sixers in game three is going to be met with quite a bit of derision. I'll be interested to see who's assigned to that game.
Yeah.
But All right, Bontas,
better be a strong crew.
We're counting on you for more coverage of that series. Okay, we got some big time game threes coming up. Cass, you're heading to the road. What do you got this weekend?
Friday, I'm going to see if, you know, the fans in Phoenix actually stick with Devin and Katie as they were crying out post game, and if they can, you know, take one at home. So I'll be there for game three between the Suns and Minnesota on Friday, and then I'll have game four in Philly for that Knicks Sixer series on Sunday at 1 on ABC. So going to be another busy weekend. Fun one.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting, see where we are by Sunday afternoon, Bontemps. You know.
Listen, our next two pods are after game three and after game four. I suspect there will be a lot to talk about, like there have been after the first two games.
Yeah, and we'll see. I think we'll see some teams strike back and some game threes coming up here for sure. All right, thank you so much for tuning in here to the Hoop Collective. Thanks for everybody staying up late. It's after 2 in the morning on Wednesday morning and putting this together for you. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review, and listen on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcast. Thanks to our producers. Thank you for listening and watching. We'll talk to you soon.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.